Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Better late than never inside the playbook today. I mean, the guys have their picks to take care of, and, you know.
It's a truncated playbook.
You know, let's, okay, you know, we'll manage to persevere, and we'll push on. And I'll try not to do the same thing to, you know, Brian Lowe and
the Fantasy,
Lowdown coming up at 4 o'clock Eastern. Welcome inside the playbook for Thursday. Now you can start to feel it. Now you can start to taste it, smell it a little bit, you know. It's that stench coming from Jersey called the Meadowlands.
I think you felt...
The one jumping right in the face of somebody.
We had a mysterious foul odor appear in the office yesterday.
What?
Around mid-morning. Honest to God, it was like a sulfur type of weird, noxious smell.
Jet sent you a stink bomb.
I don't know what it was, but it was, yeah, it lasted for a good 10, 15 minutes.
Wow.
But maybe you're right. Maybe it was a little present from the Jets.
Might have been. Wow. Strange. You guys were just talking about, at the tail end of the show, how Brady was on the cover of SI.
Yeah, there it is.
There it is.
You got it.
And Moss in the background
yep.
there. Tom Brady and the Pats take care of business as usual.
Serious fun.
Yeah.
The cover headline.
That's what it says. I don't really believe it. I mean, I think that, you know, there is still something to be said about the SI cover jinx, but I don't think it has quite the effect that it used to.
I don't know. We'll see.
You already have decided you like the Jets on Sunday.
I made that pick, yes.
Right?
Yeah, I made the pick.
Okay.
I'm sticking with it.
All right. I need another hour. I need to hear a little bit more. I need to get the temperature of the fans, too.
I'll give you the temperature of the players.
Okay, go.
Now, I practiced today. Very lively. Very, very spirited practice. A lot of energy. Upbeat. Especially on the offensive side of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Only two players missing again, John. Wheatley with the foot. Casher with the back. Full pads again.
Sounds to me then like Edelman's going to be ready to go.
Looks like it. And he talked in the locker room today, which is always an indication that,
You're going to be.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to be inactive for the game.
He drew a huge crowd.
Did he?
Yeah.
You know, I think that if he's able to go, that certainly gives the Jets something else to plan for that, you know, schematically will be difficult. For all of the finer points of the Jets' defense. Fact is, they can't cover everybody. Everybody be focused on, you know, Moss versus Revis. Mm-hmm. But I'm not so sure that a game between the Patriots and the Jets is going to be decided by Moss versus Revis. I think it'll be decided in a couple of areas. Number one, whether or not Wes Welker can continue to make, you know, the New York Jets his personal whipping boys. Based on the games that he's had with them in the recent past. Number two, whether the Patriots can try to control the clock a little bit because the Jets don't seem to be a down-the-field kind of team, that they need some time to run with it. And that, of course, is considering, you know, if, you know, giving some consideration to Sean Green and or LaDainian Tomlinson being able to run the ball against the Patriots defense,
mm-hmm.
Which right now is up in the air. I have to admit, after the first couple of days here, I was kind of leaning toward the Patriots. But there's a part of me that doesn't quite know if I'm ready to do that based on just 1 week of play. What we saw from the Pats last Sunday was great. There's no doubt about that. What we saw from the Jets last week was disappointing if you're looking at it from the Jets' perspective. Unexpected, perhaps, from anybody else's. I think we expected more from the Jets, didn't get that. I'm almost of the opinion that we got to go a little bit further, so I'm kind of leaning towards staying the course here. And at the very least, Jets covering that 3. What do you think?
Well, as we said right off the top, I've picked the Jets at the tail end of PFW in progress,
right.
And I'm sticking with that pick.
Okay.
I know what you're saying, that you like what you saw from week one. I have a little bit different opinion. I didn't like necessarily what I saw from week one on the defense.
From the Patriots' point of view?
Yeah.
I almost discount the second half, and I'll tell you why, Eric. I mentioned this earlier in the week. Game was already decided, and it was it had to have been a philosophy of just keep everybody in front of you, and I really believe that's what they did. They just kept guys in front of them. They didn't let anybody beat them deep. Cincinnati, with a couple of exceptions, you know,
Ochocinco's touchdown.
I just think the Patriots did a better job of keeping guys in front of them and not getting burned, whereas as opposed to being more of an attacking type of defense. They had the game in hand. They did not want a big play to ignite a spark in Cincinnati. They were able to accomplish that.
Well, the other thing that I didn't like was that the scoring stopped after Tate's kickoff.
Well,
except for the very end when Gronkowski got his late touchdown.
I will give you, and I talked about this on Tuesday, that was another one of the nitpicks.
There was a drought there for a while.
Yeah, there was a little bit of a drought. They didn't really keep pedal to metal. But again, week one, you know, you've got to kind of work yourself into these things. So, you know, I thought overall for week one, putting 38 up on the board was a pretty fair way to go. At any rate, you know, the Patriots and Jets seem to always play, if not interesting, certainly tight games between the two. In fact, the series all time, this is the 102nd meeting between the Patriots and Jets, and the series is dead even, 50-50-1.
50-50-1?
Yeah.
How about that?
50, that's a rivalry.
50-1.
That is,
my friends,
a rivalry.
And somebody brought this up, and I can't remember if it was last week, maybe leading up to this game or whatever it was, but somebody, I don't remember if it was here or if it was listening to local sports radio, but somebody brought the issue up is, are we ready now to finally call the Jets our most serious rival as opposed to the Colts? Because in the last couple of years, the Colts have been a better team. The Jets haven't been as competitive. We've been fighting the Colts. We've been going to the Colts. You know, we've been playing for the Colts, meaningful games with the Colts, and I can understand where people would make that leap. To me, the Jets have never not been the Patriots' chief rival. They've always been the Patriots' chief rival because your chief rivals should come from your divisional teams that you play twice a year. But the Jets have not held up their end of the bargain until recently.
Right, and the Colts were once a division rival.
At one time they were. Until the divisional realignment earlier in the 2000s, they were.
When that realignment took place, it coincided with the Colts being one of the elite teams and that run of
and the Patriots
of,
were able
title
to keep,
games and playoff
and
games.
And the Patriots were able to keep the Colts on the schedule and play them in Indy at nauseam.
So, as Bill always likes to say, feels like a division game
when you play
the Colts.
That's right. But I've always thought that this is the one game of the NFL regular season that I get up for as opposed to playing somebody like you don't play all the time, like you play the Cowboys here at home once every 8 years. You know, I mean, and that's a kind of a game that you could get up for. But short of that, this is a game, whether you play them home or away, as a Patriots fan, I get up for because it's the Jets. It's the whole New York, New England thing. Who in their own New England right minds can't get up for that?
I'm asking
you sort of a rhetorical
question.
I know you are.
That's why I gave you a rhetorical non-answer.
Goddamn snap. Yeah, well, and that's another reason. You have other guys on the other team that are personalities, maybe that's, you know, being kind.
Colorful personalities
that add to the mix.
Flamboyant.
Yes.
Personalities.
Very flamboyant. You got obviously Rex Ryan. Darrell Revis, you know, started yapping in the offseason, and that has continued a little bit this week, you know, between he and Randy Moss, which is great. I don't mind that. Revis can talk because Revis can back it up. It's guys that can't back it up on the field that you generally have a problem with and you want to, you know, slap around and you know, make them eat their words on the field. The problem with Darrell Revis is the dude can back it up right now. He's the best cover corner in the league. And it's not even close, I don't think. Not even close, Eric. Is it?
I don't think so. I think there are a couple of guys who could make the argument that they are shutdown corners, but I think he is now the premier cornerback in the league. I agree with you.
I think he is by far and away the best at not only covering but coming up with big plays, sticking with the guys. He's the best at making teams adjust. That's what I want to see in a defensive back. We got a plan for throwing
in other
this
words,
guy's direction.
Or not throwing his direction.
Right. Exactly. All right, so,
at so any do, rate, they, do you think they single cover Moss with
yes,
just him?
I do.
No safety help at all?
That's a great question. I think they're cocky enough to do that.
I think they're going to have to because of Gronkowski, Hernandez, Edelman, Welker.
Well,
all those extra options.
You're right.
They're going to have to.
If Welker gets uncorked and catches, you know, four or five in the first quarter over the middle, then you'll, you know, I mean, obviously you'll see the effects of it.
And if that's
the
case.
And then hopefully they can go to a guy like Moss a little bit later on.
That's what I was going to say. If that's the case,
right.
There are going to be times when they're going to have to take shots at Revis.
Sure.
They're going to have to go downfield with Moss. They're going to have to try because the guy is 6'4". He's got elite speed still, and he can jump. He can outjump anybody.
Right.
So at the very least, you throw up a jump ball to him. I like my chances with Moss.
Webradio at Patriots.com is the way you reach us here on the program. 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. You can also chat us up on Facebook as well, if you like. On Thursdays, Chip, typically we ask you for your score prediction. So if you haven't had a chance to give us your thoughts on the game, predict the scores, tell us how you think it's going to break down, now's the time to fire it off. Webradio at Patriots.com, 508-543-7482 is the phone number. We're awaiting Bob Wischusen from the Jets Radio Network, and we got Russell Baxter from ESPN coming up in hour number two inside the playbook. John is in Dallas, going to lead us off today in the playbook. John, how are you, pal?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
Great.
What's up?
So they're definitely going to play Revis one-on-one with Moss. They did it majority of the snaps, I think, the last two meetings, and they'll probably do it this time as well, especially given the the additional tight ends and additional weapons we have to bring to the field. So I don't think they can afford to have safety help over the top. Revis is shown capable of at least containing Moss somewhat one-on-one. So I don't see any reason why they would need safety help over the top.
Well, I just wonder now with Jenkins out for the year, do they try to do something like New England did last week where you throw in six or seven defensive backs on every play, throw in one or two linebackers, a couple of defensive linemen, and just sort of play more to what you're going to expect from New England, which is multiple five-wide sets for most of the game, I would think.
Well, I think the beauty of what the Patriots can bring this year, which is different from last year's, is they can disguise it a heck of a lot better. So if they want to go with two tight ends, three tight ends, and then have the Jets bring in heavy personnel,
mm-hmm.
or go five receivers, split everybody out wide, then bring guys closer in and run it. They mm-hmm. can do all that. And I think they can keep the Jets guessing. That's the key here, right? And I think the Patriots have the personnel to keep the Jets guessing. Even when they commit and bring on, let's say, six DBs or they load it up with linebackers or whatever, they can switch pretty quickly, I think.
Speaking of personnel, Eric, did you get an update on Edelman today? Was he out there?
Yes, he was out there. Yeah. I've done two practice reports.
I've been busy running around. I'm sorry. And we just flipped shows, too.
Guys, always got an excuse ready.
Hey, I thought of you with lunch today, at least.
You did. And I said thank you.
Yes.
So what else you thinking, John?
Well, I just wanted to thank Eric for answering my email.
Your SPFW?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I recognize you on there. I gave you a shout out.
You did. I appreciate it. So my prediction for the week will be this. I think the Patriots will win this game, not handily, but I think they'll win by, I'm going to guess and say 10 points.
10 for the Patriots. High scoring, low scoring? What are you thinking score-wise?
20-10.
20-10? I kind of like that prediction, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
I think it'll be lower scoring. I think the Jets, though, we'll figure out a way to score more than they did the nine. I think the Jets probably get into the end zone as well. I'm kind of leaning toward about 20-17 either way. I just really, honest to goodness, I'm flippity flopping on who wins it. But I'm thinking right around 20-17, 19-16,
yeah.
in that range.
My guess is 24-20, right in that wheelhouse.
I think special teams plays a really, really important piece in this game. Hopefully Mesko can knock these guys back deep inside their, you know, whatever it is, right? Keep Sanchez pinned against his goal line where he's not very, you know, he's not confident to begin with. You put him that deep, and I think we can have – it's in our favor. And then let's see how –
Who's going to get to him, John?
In terms of returning –
But who's going to get to him?
Punts and kicks. If he can give us good field position, we can operate, let's say, you know, our 30-plus – I mean, I think we're in good shape.
But who? My question, John, is who's going to get to him?
Who's going to get to who?
To Sanchez. If you pin him deep, like you said, that's great. But is he just going to get flustered because he's back there, or are we going to actually put pressure on him? And if so, who's going to do it?
I see where you're going, Eric. I don't. you know, we don't have a great pass rush. That's the problem.
Yeah.
So I think what we do is we hope we can – maybe we go with something like a 4-2-5, right, where we see if we can get enough pressure from the front four to – not saying sack them, but just put some pressure on them. And then, you know, we use our five – and maybe bring a linebacker or two with that. And then you use our five to just, you know, to cover.
I hope so.
Something like that. I kind of like that formation. I think they might have used it a little bit last week where they had, like, I think two linebackers in.
Well, they started the game with it.
They had no outside linebackers.
I
saw a lot of different schemes last week employed against Cincinnati, and it seemed – what was interesting, it seemed to confuse Palmer a little bit at the beginning. And my thought
is – Oh, yeah, he said so afterwards too.
Yeah, if you can confuse him, right, he's a pretty seasoned NFL quarterback, then why the heck could you confuse Sanchez?
Well, but they also have a whole 60 minutes worth of tape to look at now, Sanchez.
Oh, sure.
That's good. That, you know, the Jets didn't have last week to look at, so that might not be as much of a surprise as it was to Palmer last week.
Right? Bad, but do you think the Pats showed everything last week in game one?
Of course not. No,
I think they held some stuff back for this game in particular.
Right. So. Remember last year at this time they had the grease board thing when they were making the calls because they were trying to, you know, prevent the crowd noise from being a factor and the whole Kevin O'Connell going over there and giving them the plays and all that. So yeah, I'm sure there'll be something different this week.
Defense is, and I think it's an excellent, right? Probably as good as it, probably top three defenses in the league, right?
Sure. I would think so.
Yeah, I still think the Pats have the weapons this year to bust it. I really do.
It's going to be a great matchup.
I'm not saying they're going to hang 40 on them, but I think they can hang 20.
We're going to find out soon enough on Sunday. Johnny, thanks for the phone call, man.
Thanks, guys.
All right. All right, John in Dallas. 508-543-7482, the number, webradio@patriots.com.
I'd be satisfied with high 20s. If they could get that against this defense,
then I think they win.
They win the game.
Yeah. If they get, actually, I kind of like Kevin's number of 24. I think if they get 24,
that
the
might
Patriots
be enough.
Get 24, I think that's enough.
That might be enough, yeah.
I do believe that. That's kind of interesting. I have to read this email before we take a break here, but I got to read this email. It came in while you guys were on with PFW. It came from Mike in Raleigh. Wanted to play a little game of Would You Rather in preparation for the upcoming game with the Jets. Did you guys read this?
We did, yeah.
Oh, you did read that?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, then never mind. I can't ever tell. How come they all still, you know, dark here? They're supposed to be, you know, eliminated when these emails are done.
I don't know why.
Come on, Fred. Cut me some slack here. Blah, 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 blah.
He's not listening.
Exactly. All right, so where did you guys leave off then? What was the last email you did?
That might have been the last one we did.
Was that the last one?
It might have been. Pretty close to it.
What did they vote for between you and the boxers or the thong?
We didn't answer that.
You didn't answer that question?
No.
Foolish games.
It's so childish. But
wow.
For the record, I am a boxers guy.
Okay. Well, God, thank you, Lord. Thank you.
Eric's leaving nothing to the imagination.
Like Kramer said, the boys need room to roam.
Jackson, an email in here, he says, did you hear that Maroney is now hurt in Denver? Playing status is questionable.
Well, I think it's just a continuation
from the thigh injury he had that kept him out of last week's game.
Yeah. I think it's just a continuation. I don't think he got hurt already. I think he was already hurt.
Unless Doc hurt him on the plane ride out there.
No. Bad Kevin writes in. He says,
oh, did Doc travel with the Revs?
No, Doc traveled with Lawrence Maroney.
He was on the same flight as Maroney to Denver.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
yes, he was.
He went out to go hang out with his wife
and his wife's family.
It just so happened they were on the same flight.
Same flight with Maroney.
So they were chatting at the gate. I guess he texted John and myself.
Really?
Yeah.
Said he was shocked.
Said Maroney came right up to him and started chatting him up and said he was shocked.
That's I wish there were tape of that conversation. That would too interesting. To miss.
Yeah,
oh, my God.
Doc's not that smart, though, to get that recorder rolling. You know?
No, I don't think he carries the pocket recorder with him. You know? We should just wire him at all times.
Wow.
I know. Bad Kevin. I think that not signing Welker to an extension is a huge mistake. He's been the best wide receiver in the league for the past 3 years. Is he due again?
Well, no, after he has two more years, this year and 2011.
Okay.
And I think you wait.
It makes no sense until the CBA is done.
It doesn't make any sense either because he's coming off a serious knee injury, John. I want to make sure that he doesn't pull a Chris Jenkins and tear the same knee all over again.
Right. I agree with that.
a prediction for this week. He says Patriots 27, Jets 20. Special teams will have a big play. Yeah, I do too. I'll have a big play, not necessarily a touchdown, but there will be a field position swing due to them. Okay. Thank you, Bad Kevin. Let me
see. I thought he was calling me Bad Kevin for a minute.
No. No, it's an emailer known as otherwise as Bad Kevin. Jack says, I know it's juvenile, but I'd love to see in the first offensive play the entire O-line run the Jets over. Sure, it cost us 5 yards, but I want the scumbag Jets afraid of us.
Just all false start by running them over?
I guess, yeah.
Pre-snap?
Yeah, basically. You know, just, you know how, you know, when you were playing touch football in the backyard and you'd always say, no DCs, yeah. No duck in the center?
Yeah.
Basically duck in the center on everybody up and down the line.
Hmm. That would, I think,
that
draw,
reminds me.
I think that would, I think, draw a fine.
That reminds me of what the guys did. You remember the movie The Replacements?
Yes.
They did that, you know, when the guys all found out that the real guys were coming back.
Yeah.
In the second half, first play of the second half, yeah. They just start whipping on it. They snap the ball, and they just start beating the crap out of
yeah.
The guys on the other side of the line of scrimmage. Yeah. I thought that was hilarious. So, I don't know. Maybe it's just me. My taste of movies sometimes is all in my mouth, I suppose. Okay, so there you go. That gets us kind of started here. Webradio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482, the phone number. Chat us up on Facebook as well. Send the friend request to John Rook, J-O-H-N-R-O-O-K-E, and we can chat you up on Facebook as well. We'll come back and continue some thoughts. In fact, in just a couple of moments, haven't really had a chance to jump into this. Wanted to do this yesterday because it was more prevalent yesterday, but I want to get your thoughts on the whole Reggie Bush thing. And I'm going to give you an angle that nobody has brought up yet on the Reggie Bush returning the Heisman Trophy story, okay?
All right.
But you got to stick around to hear it in the playbook.
Patriots Playbook for a Thursday on Patriots.com Radio. John Rook with PFW's Eric Scalavino. We will have Russell Baxter from ESPN coming up in half an hour. Hopefully Bob Wischus from the Jets Radio Network before that. We were told he's in transit. So I know he's got a college football game to cover to this weekend. I think he's going to State College. I guess he's doing a Penn State game.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I get to go down to Chapel Hill this week.
That'd be a good one.
Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
Unfortunate that you won't be able to see my boy Quinn.
They still have they suspended. You'll recall, the story was I think 13 players were suspended for various and sundry infractions. A lot of them having to do with potential eligibility issues, and so they just basically kept these guys off the roster. They brought at least two of them back, but Quinn is not one of them.
That's too bad.
Austin is not one of them either. So
are you going to be doing any other Carolina games this year?
I do not have the Tar Heels after this weekend
that's
against Georgia.
Too bad.
Tech.
I was hoping to get your in person. Assessment, of
but like LeBron, I am going to go to South Beach. So,
are you really? I am taking my talents to South Beach
twice. So that's good. I like that part.
As long as it's not permanent,
you'll find me night before the game, corner bar stool at the Clevelander.
The Clevelander's a great place.
Yeah, good place, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah. Nice, you know, tops for the bartenders.
Yes, there are.
Yeah, very good.
Or not that they don't wear. Tops that they don't wear.
I've always maintained that if I ever disappear from the face of the earth, and I'm putting this out there for the earth to hear, by the way, okay?
You'll be easy to find?
Yes.
You'll be in the Clevelander?
Yes.
It is a cool bar.
I'll be the guy with the ponytail in the corner. The scraggly beard, but that'll be me. It's a good place. Good place to hang out and sightsee and, you know.
So maybe I did see you the last time I was there.
You might have. It's possible. It's possible. One of my favorite hangouts. All right. Here's the issue with Reggie Bush I wanted to get into.
Yeah.
Obviously, the story is that Reggie's decided to succumb to the pressure, turn his Heisman back in. Probably the right thing to do, all things considered. The man, for all of his obvious football talents, was as dirty as the day is long in college football at USC. Now, the Heisman Trophy Trust said yesterday that they were going to just leave the award vacant. They were not going to officially award the Heisman Trophy for 2005. I can't say that I blame them, but I think it's the wrong PR move to make, and I'm going to tell you why. First of all, if I'm a PR guy,
I never like to spin negative. I never like to have to spin negative. Nobody likes to spin negative. You always want to try to spin positive. How do you take a situation that obviously is a negative and spin it positive? This is a little PR 101 for you here, all right? Primarily, you do what you can to get past the issue that caused the negativity in the first place. The quickest way to get through this issue, if you're the Heisman Trophy, because now what they've decided, in effect, what they're doing is they're saying, okay, 2005's Heisman
Trophy didn't exist.
Right. Did not exist. It's going to say award vacated.
I think I see where you're going.
So anytime now you go to the College Hall of Fame or you go into the Heisman Trophy Museum in New York or wherever you're going, you're going to see 2005. Blank.
Yep.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Why draw attention to an obvious negative? If you award the Heisman Trophy, we all move on. They say, well, we're moving on, we're in the future, blah, blah, blah. You can't do that when you leave a blip on the radar. And that's exactly what the Heisman Trophy Trust is doing. From a PR sense, there will always be, hey, you know, 20 years from now, there's going to be, hey, who won the what happened in 2005? There will be people who will eventually ask that question. And you're going to have to keep bringing up the negative. It will always come back. Whereas if you decide, now, if you decide to award the trophy, which is a whole other issue, but if you decide to award the trophy, you fill in a name. Whoever wins it, you move on. 10 years from now, nobody remember. 5 years from now, few people remember it. You see where I'm coming with that?
I do. So do you automatically give it to the runner-up that
well,
year?
Well, here's the other issue. Yes, you know, I realize I'm a Texas fan, and the runner-up that year was Vince Young.
Okay. Yeah.
This has nothing to do with it being Vince Young. If it were, you know, Sam Bradford, I'd be saying the same thing here. That's the God's honest truth, okay? The fact of the matter is, we've set a precedent in almost everything we do in life. Not everything, but almost everything. Major awards, major everything, for awarding a trophy, a medal, whatever, to the runner-up. Let me give you some examples. Olympic Games.
Mm-hmm.
If a gold medal is stripped, what happens?
It automatically shifts upwards.
Thank you. If Miss America cannot perform the duties of her crown,
the runner-up
what
goes.
Happens?
The runner-up gets it.
Thank you. Do I need to go more?
No, it's not a terrible idea. I think it's now let me ask you this.
I agree with the Heisman Trophy Trust about revoting. I don't think they should revote. Too much water
right,
is passed under the bridge.
Oh, of course. You just go to what the results were.
You go to the results, you find the runner-up, you
Here's
move
my
him,
question.
You put him in.
Do you hold a new ceremony?
No.
How do you give him the trophy then?
FedEx?
Just mail it to him? You just mail him a trophy?
No, you come up with some kind of a...
Because it is football season.
Understood. You turn it, again, into as much of a positive as you can. You try to hold something maybe on the campus or, you know, with his NFL schedule or what have you. But, yeah, you award the guy the trophy, sure. I like the idea of a big FedEx truck pulling up, putting this big package down on his front doorstep. In fact, that'd be a great commercial. Somebody at ESPN should do that. You know,
yeah.
That's a great commercial. That'd be good, one of those great Sports Center commercials.
Sign for this, please.
Now, I would laugh at that. That would be funny. But I just think that we've already set the precedent in this country for allowing people to step up and step in. Why is the Heisman Trophy Trust, first of all, I don't think that they've been properly advised. Okay. I think they're being nearsighted, narrow-minded.
Let me ask you another question.
Shoot.
Of the things that have come out about what Reggie Bush did while at USC,
mm-hmm.
how many of those do you think Vince Young did that we don't know about at Texas?
You know, it's always possible that some things happen, but the problem with that is that you can't prove it, okay? You have to assume innocence here, just like we're supposed to in this country. You have to assume innocence. Now, am I saying that programs like Texas and Ohio State and Alabama are completely clean? No, I'm not. I'll give you a little insight here, okay? Mm. Back in the 1980s, when my sister was a student at the University of Texas, she dated one of the football players. She went with him on a couple of occasions to pick up his check. No lie.
From, like, a booster or?
I have no idea, and she doesn't know either. So, I'm, you know, that stuff happens at schools all over the country, okay? Mm. So, Texas is probably just as culpable as USC is. But Reggie is stupid, okay? number one. He's stupid from the way he handled this thing. And number two, USC for turning a blind eye to the situation when obviously it was out there for a lot of people to see is also culpable, which is why they turned in their Heisman. Okay? And that was the right thing to do. Now, should Texas turn in, you know, I'm not saying it was a Heisman Trophy winner that, you know, picked up a check. And for all I know and for all she knows, it could have been for legitimate work done. She dated one of the football players, and he said, I got to go pick up a check. Guy went and picked up a check. That was it. I don't know if it was ill-gotten gain or not. I just don't know that. Neither does she. But she said, you know, we were talking about this issue a month or so ago when I was visiting home. And, you know, we were talking about players, you know, being dirty and blah, blah, blah. And she goes, you know, I've always wondered because I did this when I was dating so-and-so. I've always wondered if that was, you know, I mean, did he have a job in the offseason? I asked. She goes, I don't know. Okay, well, then I guess you had a right to wonder. But she said, well, I didn't think it was my place, so I didn't say anything to anybody. I said, that's probably a smart thing to do. Mm. Especially if you wanted to survive on campus. I mean, you know.
Right.
So who knows? I don't mean to intimate that there was wrong things going on. I mean, if you want to talk about, you know, wrong things going on, let's talk to Craig James, the former Patriot running back. He's part of the reason that SMU had the death penalty slapped on it in 1987.
Yep.
Okay? And I kind of find it funny that, you know, I saw somewhere on ESPN.com or somewhere
railing against
he was railing. No, he was railing against the NCAA for not having stringent enough standards.
Oh.
And I'm like going, ha, 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 ha. Now that is the pot calling the kettle black. I mean, come on. Are you kidding me, Pony? Are you kidding me? Come on. He's part of the reason that SMU still sucks at football.
Yeah.
You know, 25 years later, they still suck. Why? Because of you and Eric Dickerson. It's a fact.
Yeah.
It's a fact. So I'm just – we all – the bigger issue here is that it exists, okay? But can we – can we, you know, here's another terrible cliche, but it's almost true. Do we throw the baby out with the bathwater? Do we just ditch college football because a few people, you know, are stupid enough to get caught? Or just because we think others, wink, wink, are doing illegal things? No, we can't do that. You have to assume innocence. You have to hope that, you know, coaches and players and boosters have some integrity, have some intestinal fortitude, have the idea that we're going to try to do things the right way, knowing full well that they're competing in the same universe as programs, as players, as boosters who are not. All I can tell you is Reggie was dumb. Reggie got caught. Reggie's got to pay the fine. He did the crime. He's got to do the time, and that's what he's doing now. And Reggie forever will be known as a cheat and as a liar and as a dirty guy in college football. That's the bottom line. For all of his wonderful talents.
You know what else he'll be remembered for, John?
What?
Winning the Heisman Trophy.
Oh, yeah. I think most fans will remember that, yes. But the problem is that, again, as time progresses, and this is where the Heisman Trophy Trust is missing out on the bigger picture. The Heisman Trophy is bigger than Reggie Bush.
Sure.
Okay?
Yeah.
The Heisman Trophy is not even arguable here, the biggest thing in college football. It is the preeminent award. It is college football. It helps make college football the great sport that it is. Everybody just about that's a sports fan knows what the hell the Heisman is.
It's the greatest individual honor in sports.
It may very well be. It may very well be. Certainly one of the most hyped and most talked about. There's no doubt about that. The problem with this is that now we know who won it in 2005. We'll know it for another 5 or 10 years. But, after we get by 10, 15 years, we can like, who won it in 2005? Why is it vacant again? What's that story? What happened there? That's going to keep coming back. And then people are going to go back and dig in the archives. They're going to see. And the bad stuff is going to keep coming back and coming back and coming back. And from a PR standpoint, that is a flipping nightmare.
Why couldn't they have just left his name there, put the asterisk after it, and say,
I don't like asterisks either. That goes back to the whole Roger Maris 61 homers back in 1961, you know, because he hit more homers in the 60 that Babe Ruth had because he played in more games. You either break the record or you don't. You either hold the record or you don't. And Reggie Bush, whether he cheated or not, he's the Heisman Trophy winner in 2005. I won't argue that. But the man forfeited the trophy. He gave it back.
That's what the asterisk would mean, I'm saying.
You keep his name up there as saying, this is the guy who won it. Asterisk being,
but then you could also,
he had to give it away.
Okay. Okay.
Then you avoid both problems. You don't have the...
But the asterisk still draws attention to it. Okay, number one.
But at least there's a name there.
There is a name there.
And it's the name of the person who actually was awarded the trophy originally.
I'm of the opinion that if you don't let him keep the award, and you don't move the runner-up in, which is what I think they should do, then why do anything at all? Why do anything at all? Just Reggie Bush won the Heisman. So be it. Let's move on. Why vacate it? He wants to turn it back in. Okay. You know, you don't want to keep it. That's fine, but your name's still up there.
Mm-hmm.
You won the award.
Right.
Why do anything? Is it, if it's about if it's about the integrity of the award, you've already screwed the pooch on that one.
Mm.
Because you've allowed him to exist. You've allowed a cheater to come in and exist. Can you imagine what'll happen? And this will happen someday. Guy gets tested positive for HGH in college ball and he wins the Heisman. What's going to happen then? Cheater. He's going to be forced to return the trophy, or the trophy's going to be pulled from him. Then what? Then what do you do? You're setting yourself up for a tremendous double standard here that the Heisman Trophy Trust does not need. That's all I'm saying. And nobody's been talking about this. I've heard time and time again, oh, no, we should, you know, there should be no revote, yada, yada, blah, blah, blah. You're missing the bigger picture. The Heisman is college football. And the Heisman's going to keep bringing down this shame that Reggie Bush has brought down on the entire sport. They're going to keep having to deal with this shame for years and years and years to come without doing something proactive about it. Vacate the award. Fine. 20 years from now, you know, your kids are going to say, how come nobody won it in 2005, Dad? What happened then? Did they not award the trophy?
Yeah.
You explain that? Okay. Yeah. Now you're creating a bad picture again. It's negative. There's nothing positive about it. It's all negative.
But it's reality. It's what happened.
It is what it is.
It's very creative, John.
Thank you. Well, I figured
what'd you come up with?
I have to slip in a Bill Belichickism only because we have to segue back into pro football. So
it is what it is.
That's what I wanted to try to do. It is what it is. So, web radio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482. Is he still on the phone? Emmanuel, you still with us?
Yes, sir.
Hey, buddy. Thanks for calling.
Hey, nice to hear from you guys. I've actually been listening for a while, and it's like my first time calling in, and got a couple of questions.
Shoot.
One obviously is coming up to the Jets game. I actually saw an interview with Mark Sanchez today, him stating that, you know, the offense won't be a problem and they'll step up. But if you look into his eyes, I don't think that guy has a clue of what he's doing out there. I mean, I don't know what you guys think. That's what I gathered from it. And I still think it's going to be pretty competitive because it's still at home. They don't want to be 0-2, and it's going to be a dogfight for the Patriots. And my second thing is that I don't know if – I didn't see extensive film on it, but I thought Patrick Chung last week played, like, lights out. Like, he was hitting hard. And I don't know what you guys thought about it. Maybe, if, you know, maybe it's a wait-and-see kind of thing, but I think he could probably produce into a really good safety this year. I mean, I don't know what you guys think about it.
Yeah, I'll start with your second question first because it's more Patriot-focused. But, yeah, Chung had probably the best game he's ever had here. From not just from a production, from a numbers standpoint, he had 12 solo tackles, 16
12?
Total. 12 solo and 16 total.
Holy shit.
Yeah. But the more important thing was they were legitimate tackles. Last year, he was one of those guys who liked to throw the shoulder and try to make the big hit as opposed to actually just making the play first and trying to make the big play second. He was going for the wrap-up first, and I liked seeing that. That showed progress to me. So I hope that's the beginning of something good for him.
Well, Bill,
and I was encouraged
following the defense closely this year from what I heard, so maybe that's a result of it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And Merriweather, I think, did a little bit better job of wrapping up first and not throwing his shoulder away as he is wont to do.
Usually. I saw everybody on that field. I don't think I've seen, like, one personnel, like, stay together for a unit. He's been swapping guys in and off the defense, like everybody played.
Yeah,
that's kind of good to see.
Yeah, there were a lot of personnel groupings and different formations that we hadn't seen before. I think out of necessity more than anything
right.
else, but it was also, you know, good game plan, and it worked for at least a good the better part of three quarters.
Right. What about Sanchez, though? I mean, what do you guys think? Like, you buy into what he's saying, or do you think he's still going to have, like, a shaky start?
Well, I think there's still time for him, but it's quickly – he's on a short leash.
Yeah.
And in a game this big,
yeah,
which is so meaningful, he's going to have to do something.
And that defense has got a short fuse, and I'm pretty sure they're going to start – especially Bart Scott, in my opinion – I think they're going to start saying some stuff if the offense doesn't produce throughout the season, and you can see this whole locker room meltdown and shenanigans.
Yeah, John, I don't know if the Jets lose this week and they start 0-2 with the two losses being at home, I think the fissure opens up wide in that locker room.
Yeah, I don't doubt it.
I wouldn't disagree with that. I would think that you'll start to see guys snapping
panic
at each other. You'll see some mild panic set in. Now, granted, the Jets have a history, though, of having slow starts of the season where they've come back and actually had pretty good years. And I talked about that on yesterday's show with you, I think. But so I don't think 0-2 is the death knell. But I think because there was so much hype coming into the year, a lot of it predicated because of, with the Hard Knocks series we all, most of us watched on HBO, that I do think that there will be some internal strife, shall we say. But by no means 2 weeks, 0-2, are they out of it.
No, but history is not on their side.
Most teams that start, I was just going to say that.
Most teams that start 0-2 have a tough time getting to where they want to go, which is the Super Bowl.
Well, it depends on who your competition is within the division.
It does, but I think off the top of my head, I can only remember the, was it the 92 or 93 Cowboys? Started out 0-2. Emmitt Smith was holding out.
93.
Was it 93?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, it was 93. Yeah.
Emmitt Smith was holding out. They lost the first two games, ended up winning the Super Bowl that year.
Right.
I think that was the first team that ever did it.
Right.
And I'm not sure if anyone's done it since then.
But Troy Aikman wasn't a second-year quarterback, I don't think, during that time.
No,
though.
No, of course not. And that was a much better – I mean, that was an established
Jimmy Johnson, the best offensive line that the Cowboys ever had.
Jimmy Johnson had been there a few years. They had a lot of playmakers all over the – but yeah, if Sanchez, I think, still can be a good quarterback, but I think this game is just the way the schedule makers put this at the usual spot of week two, it just puts that much more pressure on him to perform.
It's still a little too fast for him.
Yeah,
I agree.
I think game's still a little too fast. Manuel, thanks for the phone call. I'll be down your way in Tampa first part of next month.
Awesome, man. All right, take care.
See you, buddy. Manuel in Tampa. There you go.
First time. First time, long time.
There we go. I like that. We always like that, right? Let me get a couple of emails in here. This one comes from Keith in Dallas. Oh, Dallas is big today. I haven't listened to the podcast earlier this week, so you may have addressed this question already. How do you feel about the Lawrence Maroney trade? Yes, Lawrence didn't live up to expectations, but I think he was the best option we had because Ben Jarvis is not a good option. He doesn't run good at all. Well, I would disagree with that, Keith. I think... Benny's a, I think he's a good hard working back. He does everything the right way. He does exactly what the coaches ask him to do. He's got some speed. He's got some toughness. He runs low to the ground. All things you like for an undersized, tailback, which admittedly he is.
I will say, I don't
think.
Will he
be an every down back? Probably not.
I don't think he had a great preseason.
I don't think he had that much of an opportunity.
Well, he started the Saints game.
He did fine.
He got. I'm trying to remember now what he did against Atlanta. I don't think he
played
much against Atlanta.
I don't think he played at all until the last game against the Giants.
And no, I think he did play one other game. I think it was the Atlanta game.
Well, at any rate, Ben Jarvis
didn't have a great preseason.
Ben Jarvis is the fourth option at tailback, all right? Mm-hmm. The Patriots like Ben Jarvis Green Ellis because they like his work ethic, which is something I think we can all agree that the Patriots had issue with where Lawrence Maroney was concerned. I'm not saying Maroney's a bad guy. I think they think that Lawrence sometimes wasn't willing to do what they asked him to do. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, I'm going by what Bill said in his press conference, and he seemed to say otherwise.
Yeah.
He said he worked hard. He said he did what we asked him to do. He said he liked the kid.
But he obviously didn't do it well enough.
I don't think he liked what he got from him on the field.
Exactly.
Which
because
was
because he
indecision.
He would continue to,
He had too much indecision.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And of course, I'm sure that they would ask him, look, you got to hit the hole and then you got to explode through the hole. Your indecision is what's costing you the opportunity to get big yards. You know, and plus, you know, your offensive lineman, how long are they going to be able to hold a crease in the line? Not very long, split second, right? You got to hit the hole while it's there. When you see the crack of daylight. So that's, that, you know, that's the big issue. At any rate, he says, also, what do you think about trading Logan Mankins and Ben Jarvis to the Cowboys since they have offensive line issues and we get Marion Barber?
I don't know
about that.
I'd rather have DeMarcus Ware.
Let's just
throw in a little something extra. Mankins in a little something extra.
Yeah.
Give me DeMarcus Ware.
Yeah, I would definitely think that.
Cowboys won't make that deal, though.
No. Why would they? No. I don't think that's going to happen.
That's the only player I'd want from them.
He sent the same. It looks like he sent the same email here. Marion Barber. I'm not sure that's going to happen. I'd say it's highly unlikely. Gene in Daytona Beach. The thought of Wes Welker playing somewhere else scares me. I still remember the game in Miami when Belichick had him double-teamed and he still beat us. Can you imagine him in a Jets uniform this weekend? Doesn't your stomach feel a little sick with that thought?
I don't know. What is he talking about?
I'm not sure. I mean, I know that somebody had emailed earlier about signing West to a new deal.
He has 2 years.
2 years left.
He has this year and 2011.
Year. Yeah, so he wouldn't
be. Worry about it next year. He's under contract.
When we
don't
have a CBA. Yeah, exactly.
Worry about it when it's necessary to worry about it. Now is not the time to worry about it.
Yeah, I'm not sure why we're bringing that up. Omar in Atlanta. Guys, didn't the Jets have 14 penalties against the Ravens? Yes, they did. I think the Jets may score more this week and the Pats less, but the Jets may still be undisciplined enough to let this one slip by as well. Omar says 20-17, Pats win. That's kind of what I'm leaning toward, to be honest with you. Although there's a part of me that says if I pick the Pats and they lose, then I'm 0-2. Because we all know that's the bigger issue.
Right, you just want to be right.
I'd like to think I can be right. I'm going to try to do this. You know, that's a good question. They're doing this up on the Scott Van Pelt show on ESPN. Which 0-1 NFL team is most likely to win this week?
Oh, let me look at my sheet here.
You want to do that one?
Let me see if I can
run through that. Let's run through that real quick.
Let's see. Who's
which 0-1 team is most likely to win?
You got Buffalo's 0-1. Hell no. They're going to Green Bay.
You got the Bengals?
Nope, they're hosting Baltimore.
You got the Eagles?
They're at Detroit. That's a possibility.
Cowboys?
Cowboys are, where the hell are they? Home against Chicago, that's a possibility.
Vikings?
Home against Miami, that's a possibility.
Chargers?
Home against Jacksonville, that's definitely a possibility.
Colts?
There are a lot of them. Home against the Giants.
I think they all could.
Any one of those five.
Including the Jets, obviously, but I think.
Including the Jets,
I think they all could.
Most likely, I'll say Philly.
Really? I'm going to say
San Diego.
Most likely?
San Diego.
I was going to say either San Diego or Dallas.
San Diego. That's who I'll go with.
I was going to say Dallas, too, possibly.
Yeah, San Diego's my Super Bowl winner.
Yeah, mine, too,
so,
by the way. I had
San Diego.
Well, I didn't have him as the winner. I had him in the bowl. I didn't pick a winner this year. I wussed out.
You what?
I wussed out.
You picked a Super Bowl matchup.
Yes.
But not the winner.
Yeah.
Why?
I don't really like my Super Bowl matchup.
You still have to pick one. Who are they playing?
San Diego is facing Green Bay. I don't like that matchup.
You still got to pick somebody.
I don't want to pick Green Bay.
You shouldn't have picked them to get there then.
I'd like to pick the Cowboys, but the problem is that I don't want Jerry Jones to have his team in Cowboy Stadium. Much as I hate to admit that, I don't.
Oh,
I just don't. I know. I just totally wussed out on that one. Don't feel right about it. Don't.
Make
don't.
A pick. Just go with the Chargers.
No, they're 0-1.
They'll be back. Don't worry.
Yeah, I guess I would have to say that most likely San Diego. I would probably take San Diego over Green Bay in that instance.
I have San Diego over New Orleans.
Do you?
Yep.
Yeah, I wanted to pick New Orleans. There was just something about it. I just didn't know that they could get through the NFC again and repeat.
Oh, I had them getting in as a wild card, actually.
Oh, do you?
Okay. With Atlanta winning the division.
I think that's possible. I think they'll be back
in the playoffs.
I just don't know if they'll
make something happen.
I just don't know that they'll get all the way back through it. That one is the one that I'm not entirely certain about. So, All right. Kevin's disappeared.
Yeah,
because
we lost Kevin.
His email crashed, so we got to hang on to it here for a couple of minutes. My email is still fine, which means your email is still fine. Webradio@patriots.com is how you get us here on the program. All right, so we've kind of gone over a little bit about the game in particular. We even talked a little off, you know, topic about, you know, Reggie Bush and the Heisman Trophy issue, and why I don't feel like that's going to be something that the Heisman Trophy Trust should have to deal with. But obviously now they've forced it upon themselves that they're going to have to deal with it for future years by leaving the award vacated. What do you feel like? I mean, let me kind of reach out to you a little bit, and let's kind of look into the future. What do you feel like the chances are, if you could put an odds, a percentage on it? What are the chances that we play football in 2011?
I think they'll play football eventually in 2011.
So in other
I don't
words,
think
they might
it'll start on
not
time.
Start the season on time.
No, I have a bad feeling about the lockout being something that lasts longer than a couple of weeks or a month, and I think that will take away from training camp and the start of the regular season. I'm not willing to say that they're going to let the entire season go by without football, because that's professional suicide.
Probably.
That's killing the golden goose. I don't think either the owners or the players are that greedy. They're greedy, but they're not that greedy that they're going to destroy the good thing that they have for an entire year. But I think there will be an effect on the regular season.
Well, if they're eventually going to play, why can't they go ahead and start talking about this now and getting this done now so they don't miss any of the season?
Well,
it's still going to cost everybody money.
They have been, by all accounts. They just haven't been making any progress.
Okay.
And all the projections I'm hearing are, you know, close to certain that there's going to be one on March 1st. And I'm seeing high percentages attached to the prediction that there's going to be something that goes into August.
Interesting. So you think negotiations go into August, and
that would have an effect on training camp, the start
right,
of the regular
sure.
season, all that.
Well, that would be unfortunate.
Free agency, you'll have to forget probably for a year. I mean, it's
right. I can't say that wouldn't surprise me if something like that does happen, but that would be unfortunate. And I bring it up only because I think that, you know, at least periodically throughout the course of this season, it's going to be an issue that we'll have to, you know, that the fans are going to want to know about. Hey, have you heard anything late? Is anybody getting together? Is there any talking going on between players and owners? It's the business side of football, where we would like to be able to concentrate on the actual games that are being played on Thursdays, Sundays, Mondays. Mm. This is going to be an underlying issue that we're going to have to keep, you know, at least in the back of the memory bank, because it's going to affect, you know, future years of football.
So you just got to enjoy weeks 2 through 17.
While you can
right.
now.
Enjoy the postseason.
When we can hear things, we'll pass things along. Mm-hmm. When there's news, we'll talk about it. We'll get opinions. We'll let you ask. You know, we'll let you give your opinions here on the program where yep. it's concerned. But I would say, you know, I kind of agree with you. You ought to prepare for at least football not starting on time next
yep.
year.
So enjoy every game, every week. Enjoy whoever makes the playoffs. Enjoy the playoffs. Just watch as much football as you can. Get into college football if you're not already.
Yeah.
High school, Pop Warner.
Do it.
Do something.
Time to do it. All right. Got to go to work.
Yep.
See you, man.
I will, I won't see you Sunday because it's a road game.
It's a road
game. So I'll see you next week.
Yes, you will.
Have a good trip.
Thank you.
Enjoy the game.
Yep. Tar Heels, Ramblin' Wreck. That's me.
It's going to be a good one.
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
Tar Heels win.
At home, probably. I'll say probably on that one. Yeah, although Georgia Tech, I do like the option offense.
This from the guy who didn't make a Super Bowl pick. I'll see you, John.
All right. Eric Scalavino, staff writer for Patriots Football Weekly. And from that, we move right into our good friend Russell Baxter from ESPN. Afternoon, Russell. How are we today?
Eric, giving you a little guff there, huh?
Yeah, well, that's okay. He usually
does. I'm trying to remember. That's the longest goodbye I think I've ever heard on the air.
I know. It was pretty long.
That's all right. I got to keep Eric in my good graces. I'm sure
that's right.
There'll be one week where you're off doing whatever, and Eric will be filling in. So.
Probably. That'll happen at some point in time, but not this week.
All right, guys.
All right, see you, Eric. All right, so, Russell, how are you today?
I'm doing good.
Yeah.
I'm doing good. You make me nervous. You start talking about that CBA. And I know we're going to get to it and all that stuff. I've been kidding people for months. You know, some of my fellow employees who I love dearly, you know, as soon as they heard NFL lockout, they started sending me schedule suggestions for what I'll be doing for ESPN in the coming years. And my retort was write a book and go to the Food Network and so on. So, I mean, John, you know this, and, you know, I basically do one thing here, and that's I do the NFL. And so, and I like to kid, I'm a one-trick pony, but I'm a Clydesdale, so, you know. And, obviously, down the road. You know, it's funny, D'Amore Smith said something recently about, I think he said something about maybe he thinks the thing gets figured out in November or something. Someone was quoted recently about that.
Really?
And I don't know if he was directly quoted or it's just he's thinking off the top of my head. I remember seeing a story, or maybe it wasn't D'Amore Smith. I probably should be careful what I'm saying here. And so if I saw something recently, if that's the case, there really hasn't been any hint of it so far. Although I will say this, I do find it interesting the last couple weeks. We're seeing more long-term contracts than we saw during the offseason all year.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're seeing, and not just Tom Brady, there's been other guys who have been signed as well, getting deals done. And I don't know if that's because somebody knows something or so on, or maybe teams are just saying, well, this is how it's going to be. They're trying to get guys signed regardless of taking the chance. Because one thing we don't know, what is free agents going to be like next year if mm-hmm. we do have a season? Is it going to go back to 4 years?
Right.
Or is it going to stay at the 6 years? That 6 year rule had a huge bearing on a lot of things. You know, you see the news about Vincent Jackson today, and of course, you know, your team dealing with the Logan Mankin situation.
Right.
You know, Logan Mankin's any other year would have probably been re signed. You know, this being the fifth year of his deal. I'm sorry. He was drafted in 05. So he played 5 years. He played his contract and so on, and they were able to make him a restricted free agent.
Correct.
Any other year, he would have walked.
Right.
But then again, 2 years ago, I think the Patriots probably would have redone his deal. Just guessing. I'm just saying that's just a guess. They might have redone their deal, but knowing that free agency is 6 years now instead of 4 years, you know, think about it. Miles Austin, Brandon Marshall, Vincent Jackson, a lot of these wide receivers, Ronnie Brown, those guys signed 5 year deals.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them as first round draft choices. Some of them signed 4 year deals. But of course, being unrestricted this year meant 6 years of tenure, not four. That 2 years was huge, huge, huge.
Definitely.
Affected a lot of things.
Just for the uninitiated, if they hadn't heard, can you kind of just briefly go over Vincent Jackson today?
Well, what it sounds like and what we're reporting is that if Vincent Jackson stays put in San Diego, he'll still serve out his six games of the roster exemption, which is three games, mm-hmm. and 3 games of suspension that he got for the personal conduct policy. However, if he is dealt to a team, he'll only miss 4 games. So if you read between the lines, they came up with a compromise which makes it easier for the San Diego Chargers to trade him.
Okay. So it definitely looks like that's in the thought process of the Chargers.
Well, I would think so. I mean, I don't think you go to all that trouble to get it reduced to get two games knocked off the situation.
If you weren't planning on.
If you weren't planning on dealing him to somewhere.
Right.
Whereas it's status quo if he stays with your team.
Certainly makes sense. Certainly makes sense. All right, let's talk a little football then on the field for this Sunday, shall we?
Okay.
I'm going to start out only because this game involves the two teams that the Patriots and Jets played last week. I'm talking about Ravens at Bengals.
Mm-hmm.
The Ravens certainly looked great defensively. There's no two ways about it, no matter how bad you think the Jets' offense was last week. The Bengals, I think, largely were a disappointment, and surprisingly so to a lot of people, certainly outside of New England.
Mm-hmm.
The Bengals do get this win at home, so how bad are the Bengals, do you think, and are the Ravens as good as they showed on Monday?
Well, like we talked about last week, you know, now without tooting a horn or anything like that, I know how you felt and other people you told me felt about the Bengals Patriots game last week, and I kind of leaned toward the Patriots.
Yeah.
Mostly because, you know, one thing people forget is familiarity breeds contempt. But also in the NFL, when you don't see a team that often, you don't often know what they do. And even though the Bengals and the Patriots are in the same conference, they're not in the same division. And they hadn't played each other in 3 years. So did I expect there to be a meltdown on Cincinnati's part on all facets of the game? I mean, the Patriots scored, you know, offense, defense, and special teams. That being said, after the third quarter, we're still a 31-17 game.
Right.
So the Bengals had their chance to get back into it and so on. But To me, Cincinnati looked ill-prepared more than anything else. And I know we're going to talk about the Patriots game later. There are, I think, the two most crucial games in the league this week, and the two, or I should say the two most crucial situations or teams are Cincinnati and the New York Jets, because they're both hosting games against divisional opponents. They both coming off a loss. And for them to both fall all, forget the 0-2. For the 0-2 to include a home divisional loss, when at the very least, if you plan on winning your division, you should try to hold serve.
Mm-hmm.
I think would be crippling, especially the Jets, who would be 0-2 in their own building, much less 0-2 in the conference and 0-1 in the division. But mm-hmm. go back to Cincinnati for a second. For whatever reason, Carson Palmer always seems to play well against the Baltimore Ravens. He's 8-3 against them lifetime. I think he's 8-2 in the last two times he's played. Beat them twice last year. I think the Bengals have swept the Ravens three times in the last 5 years.
Wow.
One of those years, of course, was not Carson Palmer playing both games.
Right, okay.
So Carson Palmer seems to be the one guy. Now, here's what I'll say. Cincinnati has, I think, weaponry that the Jets don't have in terms of wide receivers. The way to beat Baltimore right now, until they get Ed Reed back and some of their corners get a little depth, is to buy a little time and go after a secondary that is suspect at best.
Mm-hmm.
I think Cincinnati has that whereabouts to do that. I'm not expecting to come out and throw it 50 times, but I think with a little balance and the threat of balance, I think they should be able, or let's put it this way, they desperately need, if they're going to, listen, they didn't lose a game in the division last year. This would not be a good time to start. And that's why I'm kind of leading toward the Cincinnati Bengals in this
game.
Wow,
okay. Well, you know, obviously, yeah, the fact is that they won the division, they went undefeated within the division. I don't disagree. I think certainly they have the pressure on them. I was just real impressed with the way Baltimore played, even, you know, down a couple of guys defensively, and I was not impressed with the way Cincinnati played last
night. Well, I'll tell you what I was impressed with what Baltimore did defensively. And I, listen, I wasn't impressed with Cincinnati at all. Don't get me wrong and mm-hmm. so on. As you well know, this is a game of matchups. And, you know, if the Jets would have had, I'll just throw this out. The Jets last week would have had Santonio Holmes, who's suspended right now, available. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Santonio Holmes has been the Ravens' worst nightmare when he was with the Steelers. The last seven games he's played against the Ravens, he scored a touch, at least one touchdown in every game.
Wow.
Okay?
Yeah.
So they've had trouble covering Santonio Holmes. He ate them alive in the three games the year the Steelers won the Super Bowl 2 years ago. Okay? So not having Santonio Holmes and having Braylon Edwards, who never fared well against the Ravens, and, you know, let's be honest, you know, 50-50 when it comes to hanging on to the pass to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really, the Jets don't have a stretch-the-field threat right now. And the Baltimore secondary is there for the taking. There's no doubt about it. The thing that really stuck out about Baltimore the other day was their ability, even though they scored only 10 points, was their ability to convert on third down. Their conversion rate on third down was about 58%. Now, last year, the Jets, no team was better in the league in stopping it. Now, be it by hook or crook, by penalty, or big pass play, the Jets, when they needed to, couldn't stop the Ravens on third down. And that shortened it. You know, it was funny, the Jets offense, which had point-blank chances a couple of times in that game, especially the first time the Ravens had the ball, remember?
Mm-hmm.
Sean Ellis sack, first down on the Baltimore 11. As the game wore on, John, the Jets got further away from the end zone instead of closer to the end zone.
Yeah, that's also very true.
Yeah, so, I mean, I again, this is a game of matchups. The teams that know each other, that's why these divisional games, that's why the league scheduled 16 divisional games at the end of the year this year. This is what it really comes down to. If you have any hopes of winning divisions or getting to playoffs, for the most part,
you got to win your division game.
You need to win your division. You need, at the very least, to probably go 4-2 in your division. And that means more times than not, winning all of your divisional games.
Especially the ones at home.
Right.
Especially the ones at home. And by the way, I do like that, the 16 divisional games at the end of the year. I think that's,
mm-hmm.
I thought that was a stroke of genius. I thought that's great. That's in an effort to keep teams from, you know, mailing it in.
And it's not just the last week. Week 15, there's 12, I believe there's 12 of them.
That's great.
There are 28 divisional games in the last 3 weeks of the season.
That was a smart move. It was a smart move to keep.
Yep. Well, I mean, they tried everything else. Why not?
Yeah.
Why not? So it's going to be rematch.
It'll keep teams,
rematch central.
Yeah, keep teams from, you know, resting a lot of guys if they've already got things clinched. If
they don't, at the very least, if you can get two or three of those games to mean playing for the division, then you've sparked enormous interest.
Absolutely. Speaking of within the division, other than the Pats and Jets this week, the Bills and Dolphins are playing some AFC North teams. Bills are at the Packers. Dolphins are at the Vikings. Now, the Vikings are 0-1, and they're at home. So I can't imagine that the Dolphins are going to have an easy time of any stretch of the imagination, even though they won last week. The Bills are 0-1 going to the Packers, who won last week. And I was just mentioning to Eric, Green Bay was actually my selection for the NFC to squeeze out of there and get to the Super Bowl. I'm not sure that I really feel strongly about that, but it was just sort of a war of attrition where the Packers are concerned. Do either one of the AFC East teams have a chance this Sunday?
I think Miami has a better chance against Minnesota, and it's going to be very interesting to see how Minnesota plays this. Here's what kind of got lost in that Saints loss last Thursday. Was Minnesota unable to stop the little ground game of the Saints in the second half. Okay, we often watch, and we always look at the rankings of the Minnesota Vikings against their run. You know, I think there was one, they were number one in the league, I think, 3 years in a row at one stretch. They're always good against the run. A lot of that is also because people don't try. And remember, the New Orleans Saints last week ran the ball 3 times in the first half. They ran it 22 times in the second half. Now they got 70 yards. Now, that, you know, that don't get that mixed up with the four horsemen. Okay? But their ability to convert via the run is what won them that game and so on. And I think Miami, with their, this is going to be a great matchup of O-line versus D-line. Okay? That is going to be the key to this game. Don't put Chad Henne in a situation where you've got Jared Allen breathing down his neck the whole time. If Miami's offensive line can live up to semi-billing, I think they'll give Minnesota problems. As for Buffalo, you know, Green Bay just finds every which way to put points on the board. They are offense, you know, it's not even like they ran run back a lot of returns or anything like that. They have supreme confidence. Now, listen, they lost Ryan Grant, we know that. And
right.
Brandon Jackson's going to have to step in. But I think Buffalo is so offensively challenged. I just find it hard to believe they can go into Lambeau Field. And even if they can score 20 points, I don't know if they can stop Green Bay from scoring at least 30.
I think that's the big issue with Buffalo. Yeah. I think, you know, whether or not they can generate enough offense to really be in games this year.
Well, yeah, I mean, listen, their offensive line, it's hard to believe it could take a step backwards. It might have, though.
Wow.
And that's an offensive line that's got a lot of issues. And C.J. Spiller had a wonderful preseason, then all of a sudden the clock turned to regular season.
Yeah.
And he had a rough time of it last week.
Right.
So,
An interesting game that I think that it certainly is going to be worth watching. Steelers playing at the Titans. It's you know, first of all, I thought Tennessee, even though it was sort of a walkover, I like the way that they seem to be clicking. They just seem to be in sync all the way around. Obviously, Chris Johnson was solid running the ball. Vince Young did what he had to do to kind of steer the ship. I liked what the Steelers got out of Dixon at quarterback. Rashard Mendenhall came up with a big play in overtime to win it. You know, I certainly think the Steelers are capable, but how good are the Tennessee Titans?
Well, listen, it's a 9-2 football team since starting 0-6 last
year. I was about to say, you know what? I mean, say what you want to about Vince Young. The man just wins.
No, the Vince, you know, and he also throws the ball pretty well, too. And last week they did. And now the one thing I will say that was a little surprising last week is that Tennessee's run defense was not great. They had troubles with Darren McFadden last week. The Raiders shot themselves in the foot a number of times, which has kind of been standard post in recent years for them and so on. But offensively, you know, Tennessee at any one time can unleash Chris Johnson and get a big run.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, Pittsburgh's defense, Pittsburgh did one thing last week they didn't do most of the year, most of the time last year. They closed out a game in the fourth quarter and then won it in overtime. Last year, fourth quarter collapses were a big problem for them. And they managed to win a game where their quarterback played okay. I mean, it was hard to believe that Dennis Dixon threw for over 200 yards, but he did. But their defense kept Atlanta out of the end zone. Atlanta's got a share of offensive weapons with Michael Turner and Roddy White and Tony Gonzalez and so on. Their defense, what a difference when Troy Polamalu and Aaron Smith are healthy. So this to me is a very, very intriguing game, and it's actually a, you know, years and years ago when it was the Oilers and the Steelers, it was a big rivalry in the 70s.
Sure was.
And the last couple of years it's gained a little bit of steam only because of,
you know, was it Lendale White who stomped on the terrible towel in Tennessee a couple of years
right,
ago? And
right.
It did Tennessee so much good that they got knocked out of the playoffs in the first round, and Pittsburgh went on and won the Super Bowl.
Right.
And, of course, last year they played on opening night, and that's when Troy Polamalu hurt his knee after making that magnificent one-handed interception. The Steelers stole that game in overtime as well. So that being said, Tennessee, very, very tough place to play as of late.
And I think they can make a statement here, Russell, based on what they did last week. I think
there's no doubt about it. Yeah. Here is going to be the one intrigue part of this. Vince Young has not played against this defense. Kerry Collins played the games the last 2 years and so on. And this 3-4, the Steelers play a 3-4, but they play the zone blitz 3-4, which means at any one time you could be throwing a ball to a DB, a linebacker, or even a defensive lineman. So it's really going to depend on the Steelers' defense to contain Vince Young. And Vince on the various looks and so on that the Steelers' defense will give him. That being said, I think Tennessee will get enough big plays at the right time, and I can see them winning this game late.
Texans and the Redskins on Sunday, I bring up only because both teams are unbeaten. The Texans are your sort of pick, you know, potentially for the AFC, part of the Super Bowl as well. We even had a couple of PFW guys in here start to say, hey, I really like the Texans, Andy Hart being one of them. So, you know, the Texans now get a chance to go on the road and take on a Washington team that was probably fortunate that Dallas lost that game more than the Redskins won that game earlier this week.
Well, it's safe to say. I mean, Dallas's defense, I thought, played pretty well. Listen, we've had the catch, and we've had the drive, and we've had the fumble. What is this going to be, the hold?
And wouldn't this really go right up the you-know-what of Jerry Jones, if not only if the Texans win at Washington, but if the Texans get into the dang Super Bowl at Cowboys Stadium?
Oh, it'd be very, very interesting. But talk about a storyline this week. This is Gary Kubiak versus Mike Shanahan.
That's a good point.
By the way, they've coached against each other before a couple of years ago. Denver came down to Houston and got beat pretty good on a Thursday night. So it's not their first go-round against each other. But, you know, both these teams are coming off interesting situations. The Redskins did not win a game in the division last year and managed to beat Dallas however which way they did it. Houston, of course, has had its problems against the Colts, and that was a big statement for them. Now, I think the Texans are the better team. I think Washington is improved. Listen, one of these teams is going to be 1-1, and one's going to be 2-0. I think for the Texans, it's going to depend on how they play for us not to say, well, here they go again, and so on. Because they were interesting last week. After Matt Schaub threw that interception, after they got out the big lead, you could see it affected them for a while. And the fact that they were able to hold the Colts to a field goal before the half and then come out and make a statement drive in the second half is what won that game for them last year. We have seen Houston blow leads to the Colts before. I just think Houston's got too many different kinds of ways to beat you. I think the Redskins are very, very limited, especially offensively, on how to beat you, especially when it comes to stretching the field. So I'm leaning toward Houston here. I think it's not necessarily a statement game for either team, but we get them both off to a nice start. But I will say this. I think if Houston comes here and lays an egg, then you got to be concerned about their maturity following up a big win the way they did.
Any shot at all, Russell, that the Colts go to 0-2? Can the Giants beat them in Indy?
Listen, you run the ball ineffectively and not stop the run ineffectively like they do, they certainly could be 0-2. And listen, I think there's some major concerns in Indianapolis. Their defense has some issues. Their offensive line is still not healthy.
And they lost Bob Sanders again.
Right, which, you know, they really didn't have him last year, to be honest with you.
No, they didn't.
But, I mean, listen, Peyton Manning can throw for all these yards. 433 yards last week and 3 touchdowns. What did he get them? Interesting stat.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm one of those guys who preaches balance, and I always talk about there. Not that I invented balance. Mr. Miyagi invented balance, by the way. For all those people saying, well, this is just a pitch and catch league and all that stuff, last week, go back and look at the 6 quarterbacks who attempted the most passes last week. Every one of them lost.
Yeah, I saw that. I did notice that. By the way, great Karate Kid reference there.
You've got to have the balance. Mr. Miyagi invented. Listen, he was really the very first offensive coordinator. Okay. Although he always stressed karate is for defense only. So, but yeah, I don't know how we got off on that tangent.
Ba-doom-tsh.
Yeah, but anyway, listen, the Giants can run the football. The Giants' defense is so. I think this is going to shape up to a pretty wild game Sunday night between the brothers Manning and so on.
Right.
But
the Manning Bowl.
Listen, I think the Giants are a team to keep an eye on as well. So it's I think this is very interesting. Could the Colts go that way? And fall to 0-2? Absolutely. This is one of those games more for prestige. These interconference games are great, and it's not that they're not important and so on. But the Colts to me, they've already, listen, think about it. They didn't lose a game in the division last year. They're 0-1 in the division. They didn't lose a game last year until they were 14-0. They've already lost. So there's little ominous signs, and their running game doesn't look any more effective than it did last year when it was dead last in the league. Although it did improve after 1 week from 32nd to 31st.
It did.
So if you're detecting sarcasm, that's exactly what you're getting.
Yeah, that's true. I'd almost forgotten they went 14-0. How about that? And then let's touch on your Monday night game on ESPN. Saints on the road. They get to play at the 49ers. I was kind of disappointed in San Francisco last week, to be honest with you.
I believe Mr. Singletary would
agree. Yeah, he would agree. I think we all expected more. I certainly expected a little more than they showed.
Well, I will say this, and I've heard Alex Smith getting a lot of this heat and so on. And, it's easy to just point a finger and so on. But, listen, another interesting stat. And take all these numbers for what they're worth. I'll just give you the facts of what the numbers are and so on.
Okay.
This is an immature football team, and it sometimes shows in their consistency. Last year, they won 8 games and gave up 56 points. If you include last week and their 8 losses last year, their 9 losses, they've given up 256 points.
Ooh.
That's a big disparity.
Yeah, no kidding.
Okay? That's an awful big disparity. Again, read into that what you will. That's erratic behavior, okay? And last week, and listen, they won 5-1 in the division last year, and the only game they lost last year was at Seattle. I understand all that. But it was the way they performed. It was the way their cornerbacks performed. Every time Seattle wide receiver made a move, it was like a one-on-one pitch and catch, and the receiver made it. And then once they got behind, and they expected, the difference of throwing when you want to and throwing when you have to, I don't think Alex Smith is a quarterback of throwing when you have to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they're built. They went out and got Anthony Davis and Mike Iupati to bolster their offensive line to pound the football. Once they weren't able to pound and abandoned the run, and maybe a little too early, okay, they became sitting ducks back there. Mm-hmm. So easy to point at Alex Smith, okay? We often do that and so on, but that game was 31-6. That wasn't all Alex Smith, okay? The Matt Hasselbeck got some interesting matchups, and it was very interesting to watch Pete Carroll on the sidelines, who was having a jolly old time, frankly.
Right. All right, before we let you go, we got to touch on Pat's Jets. That's the one that's got our focus for obvious reasons. Probably have a lot of other folks' focus. It's a 4:15 national game on CBS on Sunday afternoon. Smack talk has started. There's been some grudging respect shown by both sides toward the opponent. It is a divisional game. The Jets certainly have the pressure on their side because they're the ones that are 0-1, and they're the ones playing at home, and it's in the division as well. Question is, are the Patriots as good as they showed Sunday? Are the Jets as bad as they showed on Monday?
Well, I still have my concerns about the Patriots' offensive line, who are still missing 2 key members from the last few years. To me, the indication is that the matchups, at least up front, favored the Jets. Now, I'll boat this question to you. I heard so much going into last week about Darrell Revis will get Anquan Boldin the first week, and then he'll get Randy Moss the second week. I don't remember seeing Darrell Revis covering Anquan Boldin last week. Okay? They left that to Kyle Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And, again, here's a number. I'm not sure what it means. The first 18 games the Jets played last year under Rex Ryan, which would include the playoff wins over Cincinnati and San Diego, one player got 100 yards receiving, and that was Wes Welker.
Okay.
Okay? The last 2 games the Jets have played, the AFC Championship game against the Colts and last Monday night, 3 players have gotten 100 yards receiving against the Jets.
Wow.
2 Colts and Boldin, like we mentioned. I'm not sure what that means. I find that kind of interesting.
Maybe it just means that the Jets aren't all that.
Well,
I mean,
or little film study will eventually explain. Listen, if you can get the time, it gets these blitzes. Obviously, someone's open.
Yeah.
Okay, so we know, just like gimmicky. I don't want to say the Jets are gimmicky, but when you live by the blitz, you die by the blitz. Now, when they played in New York last year, or New Jersey, or Newfoundland, or whatever you want to call it. That first game where Brady struggled, he did not have Wes Welker. That was Julian Edelman.
Mm-hmm.
They played later in the year, and a lot of that was the New England defense. I think Lee Bodden had the three interceptions. Sanchez, I believe, threw four and so on. So this is going to be a game of matchups in the trenches. It'll be interesting to see Welker's effect this time around, and he had a huge game when they played the last time. I think he caught, what, 15 passes
yeah.
for 192 yards?
Yep, big day.
Okay, he played, again, he didn't play in the first matchup. To me, it comes down to whether they can protect Brady. And I think the Jets, if they're going to win this game, and I'm going to pick the Jets to win this game because I think it's a desperation game for them, even though it's week two, they have to take. You know, Baltimore last week, John, turned over the ball three times on their first four possessions. And the Jets got, I think, two field goals out of it.
Wow, that's right.
They have to capitalize on any mistakes they get from the Patriots, which are rare to begin with. I also believe if Brady does throw a pick, they got to take it to the house. In other words, the defense has to take matters in your own hands. This was the number one defense with that swagger, with that intensity last year. This was not a team that was an offensive juggernaut last year. They ran the football better than anyone. And by the way, that running game from a year ago is now missing the left guard and the 1,400-yard back in Alan Faneca and Thomas Jones.
Right, correct.
So, and you went out and got Santonio Holmes, and he's not available for three more games.
Right.
So I think I'm going to take the Jets, and I think the Jets have to do it on the defensive side of the ball, and then everybody can relax at least one more week in New York and New Jersey.
All right. Russell, thanks, as always. Great to talk to you.
All right, John.
Talk to you next
week. Enjoy some interesting games.
Absolutely. Well, we will always do that. Thanks, Russ.
You're welcome.
Russell Baxter, ESPN's research coordinator, NFL research coordinator, ahead of all things NFL at the ESPN Wide World of Sports, and joined us here inside the playbook each and every Thursday. All right, we're still efforting Bob Wischusen from the Jets Radio Network. We've been playing phone tag with him throughout the course of the program. It happens because he did tell us he would be in transit today, trying to get, I think, to a college football game that he's covering this weekend. So we're going to try to get to him here in a couple of moments and see if we can't pick him up if he's available. In the meantime, webradio at patriots.com, still looking for your thoughts on predicting the game on Sunday. I think I'm about ready to tell you what I'm thinking about the game. I have, along the lines of what Russell was just saying, I just think that there's a sense of urgency that the Jets most likely will be playing with that concerns me a little bit about that particular game, and I think that might end up being the overall deciding factor in it. Not quite ready to say, you know, it's going to be all it's going to be all Jets in this one, but at the same time, I just think when you're playing with a little chip, when you're playing with, you know, your back against the wall a little bit, you know that you need it. Not that the Patriots don't need it, but you would just, you know, based on what happened last week, you know, I think that the Jets will be very dangerous. Bob Wischusen does cover the Jets on ESPN Radio 1050 AM in New York, the flagship voice of the Jets, and he joined us here inside Patriots Playbook. Bob, thanks for a couple of minutes. Sure appreciate it today.
No worries.
You know, do you get the same sense from the Jets this week that this is their opportunity to make a little hay because they did lose, so they might be playing with a little more urgency this week?
I get that sense from the team, but you know, the funny part about it is if a Jet fan heard what you just said, he'd be laughing because he watched the offense this past week, you know, have six first downs in the whole game.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, if the Jets do kind of with that back up against the wall intensity, you know, like a, you know, kind of the corner desperate animal come out and play, just an incredibly physical, dominate both sides of the line of scrimmage game, then they'll have a great chance to win. But at the same time, I don't think there's a Jets fan right now after watching the offense on Monday night against Baltimore that would put a bet down on them scoring more than 20 points. And, you know, Tom Brady, he can score 20 points in his sleep against almost any defense in the NFL. So I'm fascinated to see how the game plays out. I think it is a toss-up game. I mean, I think it was a two-point spread. I think that's accurate. I think it really is two very evenly matched teams. Maybe the game being down here will make a difference, but, you know, this is going to be a very, very hard game for them to win based on how they played on Monday night.
Why do you feel, Bob, the team got off to the rough offensive start? Did you see anything at all during camp or during spring, summer camp or the preseason games that indicated to you that something's missing here?
Well, the one thing I think, just from a philosophical standpoint, it was a very conservative game plan. There's no question about that. But this is something that I think was almost done to a fault going back to the beginning of the offseason for the Jets, and it was kind of a perfect storm. You know, last year, Mark Sanchez threw 20 interceptions. He was a rookie and made bad decisions, as rookies will. Their reaction to him making all those bad decisions was, you know, Mark, don't be afraid to check the ball down. It's okay to throw to your backs. And they went and did some research on his behalf and found that pretty much all of the really good offenses in NFL history have at least one back that averages about 40 catches in a year. And that doesn't have to be Roger Craig catching the ball 70 times or 60 times in a year, but, you know, most really good offensive teams have a back that averages 40 catches. And they brought in LaDainian Tomlinson, who can catch the ball. So I think the whole offseason they're telling him, hey, we've got LT, check down to him. You know, good offenses check down to their backs. Don't force a bad decision. And then in the first game of the season, you're playing Baltimore. Now, Baltimore has to be one of the three or four defenses, maybe along with the Jets, where you're most likely to check down against.
Right.
On top of that, Rex Ryan used to be their defensive coordinator. So he admitted that all week he was kind of saying to Mark Sanchez, hey, these are my guys. Trust me, check down against these guys. They live off the turnover. So I think they just had him in such a mentality going into this game of, if I don't see what I want to see the minute I look downfield, check down, that they got into a mindset that was very, very conservative. And, you know, they never got any flow going offensively.
Okay. What do you think, Bob, is the biggest change in the team this year as compared to the team from a year ago that made it to the AFC Championship game?
Well, I mean, they still want to tell you that they're the ground-and-pound Jets, but they played LT more snaps than they played Sean Green on Monday night. They still tried to run the ball and actually ran it. You know, if you look purely just at the running numbers, they ran it okay. I mean, LT averaged about 5 yards a carry. They ran for over 100 yards, but they just couldn't make first down. So, you know, I think, though, when you bring Santonio Holmes in, and he'll be here after week four, you've got Dustin Keller, you know, a year older. You traded for Braylon Edwards last year. You know, you bring in LaDainian Tomlinson in the backfield, clearly the idea is that you're going to open things up and throw the football more. That, to me, to a certain extent, is why Monday night was so baffling. Now, maybe they'll be radically different once Antonio Holmes joins them in week five, but I expected them to be a much more, you know, wide-open, spread-you-out type offense, and we just didn't see that on Monday. Now, again, that might have been dictated by the opponent. They only lost by a point. It is funny, you know, they listen to Jet fans talk about the performance and the media talk about it. It's almost like they lost 35-7. It's almost like they were the equivalent of the Bengals against the Patriots. And they weren't. I mean, it was a very, very physical game. They had the ball with 1:50 to go and a timeout, needing only a field goal to win. So they were right in the game, obviously. This was not the Bengals to just get in, you know, want to tell you that they're going to go to the Super Bowl as well and just got embarrassed and shoved around and beaten every possible way that you could get beat. You know, this was a very close physical football game. But, yeah, if there was one thing that surprised me, it was that, you know, after kind of touting Sanchez as being a year older all during the offseason and getting all of these weapons, that it still seemed like they just wanted to, they wanted to win the game 12-10.
Right. Right. Bob Wischusen of the Jets Radio Network joining us here inside Patriots Playbook. You know, I have to admit, you know, a matter of 2 points, we're talking about this game completely in a different light. And I think that's the one thing that really kind of makes me chuckle the most, the fact that, you know, all the Jets aren't as good as they were last year, but then 2 more points, they win the game, and it's kind of like, well, we got to take the Jets seriously. It's funny how this game sometimes works out like that.
There's no question. And, you know, the Jets last season, it's funny, everyone wanted to say, hey, they were 9-7 last year. It wasn't like they went 11-5. They were 9-7 or 12-4. Having said that, they lost some games last year that were inconceivable. I mean, if you went back and looked at it kind of game by game, and I always will look at it, I'm sure, through Jets colored glasses because I do all of their games. So I don't see how every snap plays out for the Seattle Seahawks or the Denver Broncos. But for the Jets, you know, I know what they did last year. You know, Sanchez threw three picks at home against Jacksonville, and they lost, you know, by a score right at the end of the game. He threw five picks at home against Buffalo, and they still had a chance to kick a field goal in overtime to win the game, in a game where their quarterback threw five interceptions. Check how many times a team has a chance to kick a field goal to win a game where their quarterback throws five picks. They lost the game at home where the Dolphins had 100 yards of total offense in the game and beat them because Ted Ginn ran back two kickoffs for touchdowns in the same quarter, and Jason Taylor ran back a fumble for a touchdown. So they had three or four losses last year that were inconceivable. And I have to tell you, this one was right up there. I mean, to have only six first downs in the entire game and to be 3-1 on the plus side in the turnover ratio at home and to lose is really hard to do. So, in a way, it kind of continued the theme from last year that, you know, they, as many times as they found ways to win last year, they found just as many games during their season where they found ways to lose and games where statistically, you know, there were some stats where they'd be 98% to win the game. But if you only have six first downs on offense and you start four drives in plus territory and score 9 points, which is what they did Monday night, that's a good way to lose.
Sure. Bigger loss for the team, Chris Jenkins this year or Alan Faneca in the offseason?
Oh, I think Chris Jenkins across the board. Now, having said that, it's ridiculous to say, only because last year, statistically, they got better once Chris Jenkins was hurt. And this past Monday night, he got hurt on the fifth play of the game. And in the game in totality, the Ravens ran for, I think, 45 yards or 46 yards on 35 carries. So the Jets held them to, like, 1.3 a carry or something. And that's Ray Rice, who gained 1,400 yards last year on the ground alone. So I think they're more than capable for making up for Chris Jenkins being hurt, but you'd love to have him. I mean, he's such a leader. He's such a good guy, such a spirited guy. And he's a rally around the nose tackle in the 3-4 kind of player. And when you lose that anchor in your 3-4, it really hurts. So they love their depth at that position. Now they're going to have to, you know, try and skate through another year without the depth. I think the guys that they have to take over for Jenkins will do well. But, I think Alan Faneca, you know, he's really at the tail end of his career. And, and I think, you know, from all reports, really struggled in his first game in Arizona the other night.
Yep, I heard that too. What are your impressions on the whole Hard Knocks experience? And was it good for the team, good for the franchise, good for the fans? Was it good for anybody other than HBO?
Yeah, it shows you kind of the dichotomy of an NFL organization and where they value certain things. It's great for the organization because if you want the brand out there, I mean, if you're in a town where you're kind of always thought of as the second sister to the Giants and you want the back pages, then it's great for you. I mean, the Jets right now are a national team. They have become a big national story going to the championship game last year and not being on Hard Knocks this year. I don't know that it's ever good just for your football operation, which is why I have a very difficult time. There are certain organizations, the Patriots at the top of the list, where I think, you know, hell would have to freeze over five times before they would do this show. Because, you know, I mean, the guy in the big office in New England, he didn't want anything from his football organization in any way shown to anyone, I would think. So, you know, I think the Jets were willing to sacrifice some of that privacy to get their brand out there and to be a bigger story and to show free agents around the league that it's a great place to come and play and, you know, show them what a great person Rex Ryan is to play for, and the facility really might be the tops in the NFL. All of those things. But from a competitive standpoint, you know, I don't think the show really reveals anything. I mean, I think for the most part, it's really much more about storytelling than it is about breaking news or trying to you know, show anything that's sensitive. But there's no competitive advantage to do Hard Knocks. I mean, if anything, something might slip through the cracks, and it's a competitive disadvantage. So I think it's just, you know, it's kind of where you weigh the priorities in your organization, your brand, and wanting to get out there versus whether you're just a football team and we play football and don't let anybody inside.
Right. Is there a part of you or part of anybody else, I guess, within the organization that wishes Darrelle Revis might be a little bit more measured in his comments? Or is basically everybody realized that, you know, hey, that's just, you know, Darrelle, and he obviously so far has kind of backed up what he's been talking about. And obviously, well, I'm referring to the whole, you know, war of words that seems to be going on with him and Randy Moss.
And look, if Darrelle Revis measured his comments, then he would be, like, the only guy in the Jet organization that does. So what's the difference? I mean, if every other guy in the locker room, including the head coach, says we're the best team in football, we're going to win the Super Bowl. You know, what's the difference if Darrell Revis comes out and says, "Yeah, I'm going to take down Randy Moss"? I mean, it's, you know, so yeah, to me, really, you know, you're, no matter what any individual player says out of the Jet locker room, it's a drop in the ocean because the head coach has no problem standing up there and saying, "We think we've got the best team and our goal is to win the Super Bowl, and you've got a target on you, or we've got a target 10, you know, you've got a target on us, we've got a target 10 times bigger on your back." I mean, he has no problem. And I think from a player's standpoint, they look at it this way, showing faith in his football team. I think the players like it. Does it shine a light on them and maybe give some bulletin board material to the other team? Sure it does, but he doesn't care. So, I mean, Darrell Revis, he basically, through his own actions, has given the green light to every guy in his locker room saying whatever they want to say.
Gotcha. Sometimes we know that that's a good thing, and sometimes we know that that's not so good. But if you can back it up on the field, the team is winning, you certainly can tolerate it.
That's the truth. Yeah, there's no question. That last year, they went from Rex in week 14 standing at the podium going, "Jesus, terrible to miss the playoffs and we're done," to later that same night realizing that if they won their last two games, they were in.
They were in, right.
So, and then they ended up in the AFC Championship game. So, you know, if there was anything to quell Rex's, you know, inner bravado, it didn't happen last year. I mean, they ended up in the championship game as a 9-7 team.
That's right.
So with a rookie quarterback. So, I mean, I think he probably has every reason to feel confidence moving forward. Regardless of what their record was, he'll sit there and say, "Hey, we're the number one defense in the NFL last year, and we went to the AFC championship game with a rookie quarterback. Who does that? And very rarely has it ever happened in football. Why wouldn't we think we would be better than we were last year when we've added people that we think are better players and the quarterback's a year older?" You know, so we'll see how it plays out. They played a really good defensive team on Monday night. Was it their own lack of execution, or was it the Ravens just being that good? I guess we're going to start to find out on Sunday.
Bob, thanks so much for the time. Sure appreciate it.
No worries.
All right, Bob Wischusen again, radio voice of the New York Jets. He'll have the call on the Jets Radio Network on Sunday afternoon again with a 4:15 p.m. Eastern Time kickoff at the new Meadowlands. I'm going to squeeze in a quick break here, all right? Then I got to re-log into the computer, and we're going to wrap up with your emails. You got a minute or two to fire off your score prediction if you haven't done it yet. Please do so. Webradio at patriots.com, or chat us up on Facebook as well. We'll get to your emails, your comments, your thoughts on the game, and I'll give you a score prediction as well, coming up in the playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com radio.
Hey, don't go yet, sir.
But the light turned green.
Well, you don't go till I say so. You play by my rules. My rules.
Ball start, loss of 5 yards, still first down.
What are you talking about?
Unsportsmanlike conduct, 10 yards.
Unsportsmanlike is 15 yards.
Move the chains!
You are a crossing guard.
Personal foul, 15 yards.
And stop blowing that whistle.
Think football? Bank football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warmups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Delay of game,
but,
5 yards, first down.
But you're not...
Keep the Change patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services N.A. Bank of America N.A. Member PIC. Copyright 2009. Bank of America Corporation.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines Flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting
at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
It's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay, Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. You want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on the New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together, talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
All right, here we go back at the playbook as we round third and head for home here on the program. Couple of quick emails here. Johnny in Peachtree City, Georgia, he says, Pats 42, Jets 17. I see the Pats handing them a beatdown that will shut up the Super Bowl talk for a while. Thinking Belichick is going to come up with a heavy dose of Gronk and Hernandez and his game plan to beat the Jets blitz. Going underneath to them will slow down the blitz and open the vertical game. I wish I shared that opinion. But I like the thought process. Good positive vibes going that way, right? Steve sends me an email, and he ended up chatting up with me here on Facebook. So thank you, Steve. He says, thank you for reading my Mankins email rant on Tuesday. I still disagree with you, but that's okay. One thing I was not clear on is that I believe someone with the Patriots made Logan a promise and they did not deliver on it. Okay, fair enough. Moving on to the Jets, I think rather than assessing only the respective performances from just last week, we need to look at all games from the Rex Ryan era, I think the first game last season to the Jets' credit was an ambush. They succeeded in surprising the Pats and putting the offense on its heels all game, and yet the Jets' margin of victory was rather close. Second game, Patriots adjusted. There were no surprises. The Patriots were prepared and handled the Jets, and now we're at the third game. I cannot see the Jets pulling off another ambush. I think both the Patriots' offense and defense are improved over last season, marginally at the least, possibly greatly improved. The Jets, I see their defense as good as last year, but their defense has taken a step back, if only slightly. So I have to give it to the Patriots with a continuation of where they left off in last season's second game. He says, Pats 27, Jets 13. Sheila in Clearwater, Florida. A few years ago, I was able to go to a live game in Foxborough, was amazed at all those people just sitting around watching the game and complaining if anyone stood too long. When there was a good play by the Patriots, the crowd went wild, but then just sat down and waited for the next good play. This confused me because I make more noise at home screaming at the TV. You know, we did talk about this at length during yesterday's show, and I know that Tom Brady mentioned in his comments to the reporters yesterday he was, you know, a little bit surprised to see people getting up and leaving late in the game on Sunday, and I know it was on local radio here, especially in the midday slot as well, and we ended up talking about it all day yesterday. Fact is that our crowd, as I like to put it, has just gotten fat and sassy. No two ways about it. We have too much of the wine and cheese crowd sitting in the seats, expecting to be, you know, waited on hand and foot in the in the club seats. That's just the way it is. It was the way that it was. I knew it was going to be that way when the stadium opened back in 2001. There's no going back to the old way. Our fans are not what they used to be. I think we had best get used to that. Let's see. Sheila goes on. I'm not blaming. I want to get to the part about the game here. Rex Ryan and the Jets are loud and big-mouthed and boisterous. So are the fans. The Patriots are quiet, dignified, and hardworking. So are the fans. My suggestion is, before the game, sell $10 T-shirts that have the Patriots logo and a 12th man on them. Tell anyone wanting to buy one that they need to watch the board and make noise when it flashes 12th man. Also, there are big groups of kids that the Patriots Charitable Foundation gives tickets to. Give them the shirts with a promise to scream when they see it on the board. I felt that getting the chanting and screaming started is the hardest part. Thank you, Sheila, for the suggestions. Quayo the Aggie says, there are reports that Revis is having hamstring issues at practice. I always knew something like this might happen after the time he spent outside camp. He is human. We'll only find out for sure on Sunday, I think. John says, I'm not going to pretend I'm not worried about this game. A huge part of this has to be our O-line and their ability to not only protect Brady, but to present a show of force. Stand up to the D, get in their face instead of the other way around. 24-14 Pats. Jack says, watch for the Jets to throw a lot of cheap shots and late hits. They're desperate. They want to hurt us. The Jets are becoming the Raiders. I don't know about that, but okay, fine. Let's see. This one comes from Rich in Howell, New Jersey. Jets defense is better than the Bengals. Pats defense is not as good as the Ravens. Jets get more than six first downs. Pats offense won't score as many points either. But with all that said, Pats 23-13. All right. So far, I haven't been able to make up a decision.
A lot of pro-Pats emails in that last.
A lot of pro-Pats. And then, and Jamie sends this one. He says, Randy Moss will get a touchdown on Revis. Pats win 17-10. B-Low on the Fantasy Lowdown. Randy Moss. B-Low on the Fantasy Lowdown upcoming here. What do you think about the game on Sunday? Do you want to venture a guess?
Well, all I really have to say is that magazine that's sitting right in front of you to your right.
Yes, the one with Tom Brady and Randy Moss in the background on the cover.
That doesn't feel right, does it?
You believe in the SI jinx?
I've seen enough evidence.
Okay.
I've seen enough evidence. It probably isn't appropriate for these airwaves to recall who was on the – wasn't he on the cover sometime around September 7th, 8th, 9th, something like that, 08? I think he was. I'm not going there. I guess I did, but
I just did.
But no, I do sort of believe in the SI jinx. But that being said, I do like the Patriots on this this Sunday.
I really do like the Patriots.
I do. I try not to be one that goes off of small sample size like week one, because going into the season, 2 weeks ago, let's say I penciled them in for an L in this game. But I think Jets played Monday night. A tough physical game they put a lot into. So that 30, 36, 32-hour difference in game time, if anything, it's advantage Patriots.
All right.
I also think that while the Jets defense, the Patriots offense won't do the Jets what they did to the Bengals. I mean, the Jets defense will hold up a little stronger than the Bengals will. And the Jets will win their share of games or with defense and running game. But I was impressed with the Patriots' run defense. I feel like the Patriots' run defense was an underrated element of their game against the Bengals. And I think if they can hold up strong in that category on Sunday, then, take away the Jets' strength right there and you could really render their offense virtually irrelevant. I give them the edge. I like them this Sunday. I do.
Well, all right, I'm ready to call it here since we're getting into your time for the Fantasy Lowdown. I said at the beginning of the show I thought 20-17 was the right score.
Just didn't have a winner.
I just didn't have the winner. I'm going to take the Jets 20-17.
Fair enough. I mean, listen, it's not like I say with utmost confidence that the Patriots are going to go into the Meadowlands and win. But
I just kind of feel like the Jets are going to have to play with a little bit more of an edge. I think they're going to feel like there's a little bit more a sense of urgency here. I do believe that, Sanchez can't be near as bad as he showed on Monday. A lot of that probably had to do with the Ravens defense. And there's a part of me that says, I took the Bengals 31-30 last week, so maybe I need to go 2-for-2 here.
We're at odds again, John.
I know.
And from the Jets' perspective, I mean, it's almost strange to even say this, but could they actually recover from starting 0-2 with two home losses?
Well,
talk about urgency.
Home losses, it will be tough. Home losses in a row, I just think that X factor in there, I don't think they're as bad as they showed, especially in offense. I think they'll get back to trying to run the football and control the clock and not give Brady and company an opportunity.
Which is what happened in week two last year.
Exactly, which is why I think they'll probably go back to that type of game plan and we'll see that type of score. Maribeth in Syracuse says, love the Pats Sunday by 7, 28-21 Jets. They look confused on Monday. Thank you for that. Thank you for all of your chat notes and your emails in the program. Thanks as well to Russell Baxter from ESPN and obviously Bob Wischusen for the Jets Radio Network. Stick around. We got the Fantasy Lowdown with Brian Lowe coming up next right here on Patriots.com Radio. Same Pats time, same Pats channel for Nitpick Tuesday next week, friends.
Tuesday through Thursday. Hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program.
Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook.
Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com radio.